Unfortunately, she don't hang out at record stores. They don't play us on the radio. So she hadn't any reason to know otherwise. She's heard it alluded to that we have a live album, but she's never heard it. And I guess she figures it's, you know, just some live album and there's no reason for her to have to do it. It's not like she's really a fan or anything. Anyway, she's mom. Your mom to be too big a fan. But I did write this song about her on the occasion of her remarriage to a truck driver named Chester. When my mom and dad got divorced, my mom, she was so miserable and so unhappy, she locked herself in her bedroom and she didn't come out for 6 years. In my mom's bedroom, she had 3 TV sets like Elvis the King used to have so she could watch all her favorite shows at one time. And back in the days of VCRs, which to her are still going strong, she had 2 VCRs on top of each TV so she could record everything that she was missing. She'd just stay up all night drinking vodka and milk and reading the National Enquirer and flipping them channels. My sister graduated from school and the child support ran out and my mom, she was forced to go out and get a job. Which doesn't come easy in a part of the country that I'm from. The economy pretty much tanked there around the time of the Depression and it hadn't really recovered yet. Roosevelt came and toured the place and said, "I'm sorry, there's just nothing I can really do for you people." Get any better for a while, and then Kennedy came and he said, "You know, I think I have a plan. I can fix this shit." Within a few weeks, he was dead. And the next president who came was Jimmy Carter as he was running for re-election, and we all know how much good that did. Instead, we had Ronald Reagan on the fucking TV set talking about how Jimmy Carter was kicking off his campaign in the birthplace of the Klan, which isn't even true. Like he can talk about Jimmy Carter and the Klan in one sentence. But I digress, as I tend to do. My mom did finally find a job. And it was at this place called R&D Trucking in Florence, Alabama, and they hired my mom as what they call a truck log auditor. Her job was to make sure that the truckers weren't driving too many miles without sleep or something, and keeping them from getting fined by the DOT. And there was this one truck driver, and his name was Chester, and Chester was the biggest, meanest motherfucker at R&D Trucking. And Chester weighed about 350 pounds of pure muscle and gut. And Chester had Kim tattooed right there on his forearm. And legend has it one night in Vietnam, Chester killed 8 men in their sleep in order to escape from a POW camp. And I don't know if it's true or not, but I hadn't seen any ads on the TV telling me otherwise, so I'm going to assume it is. So every Monday morning, my mama, she's calling that big, mean motherfucker in her office, and she's bitching him out, and finally one day, she just goes off the deep end and completely snaps, and she's up on top of her desk, so she can have a height advantage on that big, mean son of a bitch, and she's yelling at the top of her lungs, and she says, "Chester, goddammit, every week you fuck up your logs when you know I'm gonna catch you. You know I'm gonna call you in here and bitch at you. What gives? Except she said it a whole lot louder. And he looked my mama right square in the eye and he said, Jan, it's because I'm in love with you and I knew the only way I'd ever get to talk to you is to fuck up my logs so you'd be calling me in here and bitching at me. And 6 months later, the day Chester and my mama, they ran off to a tattoo studio and he had Kim changed to Jan. And then they eloped at Pigeon Forge, Tennessee, and they got married at Dollywood. So I wrote my mama this song as a wedding present. And I could never make this shit up. So it's pretty much true. Except for one line, and I'll let you find that. See the world. drunk I can get in the first set, I still survive the second set. The object of this game is to see how much, if I can drink just enough to keep my throat working in the first set and still play the second set. For those of you who want to brave both sets, though, I will do my best to play a different show with a little bit of overlap, because sometimes that's got to happen. But, without any further notice, the song about got me killed. Fortunately, I did change the names in it, because as my good friend Jason has learned, it's better that way. But I wrote this song about this really, 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 really big motherfucking guy who owns a pawn shop in my hometown. And pawn shops sell guns, and an Alabama pawn shop sell a lot of fucking guns. And this big fucking guy married a friend of mine who was kind of crazy, obviously. And we had this little run-in one night that kind of ended up sort of like that scene in Pulp Fiction, but not quite as bad. But I wrote this song before I saw Pulp Fiction, and when I saw Pulp Fiction, I thought, man, that almost happened to me. And I wrote the song, and it came out on a record, and then I went and played solo one night in my hometown, which is always a bad idea, unless you're from Chicago or something, which is probably okay. When you're from my hometown, playing there's a bad idea with the band, and it's a worse idea when you're by yourself without armed guards. I'm playing this little Cajun restaurant on the 4th of July. And I'm thinking, I hope that son of a bitch don't come. But there's no reason to think he would, because, you know, it's not like he's really into rock or anything. But I'm in the middle of my set, and I see him walk through the door, and I think, well, I know one goddamn song I'm not going to play tonight. And about 10 minutes later, a waitress comes up with a shot of Jack Daniels and a little note on it that says, Margot and Harold. And she said, the really tall gentleman at the bar sent this to you. I said, God damn it. We were like this rule, if someone buys you a drink, you kind of have to play it. I don't always follow that rule, but there was nowhere to hide, and so I had to that night. And so I played the song, and as soon as the set was over, I made a beeline for that big tall motherfucker. Because, you know, if I'm going to die, I want to know about it as soon as possible. And I walked up to him, and he looked down at me. He's sitting down, I'm standing up, and he still looks down at me. He goes, well, everybody likes to be immortalized in a song.